Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take time out of your busy day to consider this. 30 years ago today at about 5 p.m., Mark Lapine calmly walked into a mechanical engineering class at the École Polytechnique and ordered men and women to stand on opposite sides of the room. The men were told to leave the room. 9 women were left. Lapine told the women he was fighting feminism. Then he proceeded to shoot them all, killing 6 women. Lapine left the classroom and wandered the halls, randomly shooting women for the next 20 minutes before turning the gun on himself. By the end, 14 women were dead. It remains the largest, most deadly mass shooting in Canadian history. While there are many interpretations of what happened that day, many characterize the massacre as an anti-feminist attack representing a wider societal trend of violence against women. Since 1991, the federal government passed legislation declaring the anniversary of the shooting as a National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. Right now, in Cobourg and across the country, there are many events taking place to mark this tragedy. A group of county people are at this minute gathering in a green space east of Victoria Park where there is a memorial to women who have suffered violence. They will remember the 14 plus all women in Northumberland and around the world who have died or are victims. Today, Consider This is going to mark this day as well. I am pleased to have in studio with me Ashley Bowman. She is a community activist. She is the chapter leader for PFLAG, a group supporting LGBTQ+ in this region since 2016, though she started volunteering in 2014. She is also the co-founder of the Cobourg Queer Collective. She is part of the End Silence Against Violence Committee. They do this December 16th ceremony every year, and a committee member of Take Back the Night Port Hope with Liz Warmland, who was also mentioned to be a guest today, but was unable to make it. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you for having me.
Before we start, I wanted to talk a bit about mentioning Mark Lapine's name, because I know this is somewhat controversial among people. I'm wondering if you could maybe help us better understand some of the sides to which, or what one of the, some of the reasons why people don't like to hear Mark's name repeated.
I think because what he did was so heinous, people don't want to give him power by repeating his name. But on the other side of that, it's important to identify him because his acts were so heinous and because he was actually targeting what he perceived to be feminists. You know, not, I can't say that all those women in that classroom may have identified as feminists. I know some did not, but it is a hot topic. I do think it's a very personal issue. I feel indifferent. Like, I've used his name before in posts because I feel it's important, especially for those that might not know the history. He is a terrible person. Unfortunately, certain groups on the internet herald him as a hero because of what he did, because he viciously attacked women. And, you know, they think it's good that he went out and shot feminists. But, like, we just have to remember him, how he was, and just, like, a terrible person. And what he did was awful, like, destroying the lives of so many women. And not just the ones that he shot, but just in general, anyone that was there that night who experienced that atrocity. It was just heartbreaking.
You know, it's interesting. I have two views on it. One as a journalist, where I feel very strongly that we as journalists must speak directly to things and shine light onto things that are dark. And so I feel we have a responsibility to do that, but I also appreciate the sensitivity of it and the impact of doing that. But I also feel as a man that, you know, one of the things that scares me a bit is that this guy becomes a ghost and that we start to talk about it in generalities. And as men, we don't take on the responsibility that we have as being allies in this fight against violence against women.
Of course, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So let's start to unpack this a bit. How do you define feminism?
I define it as just like you want equity and equality amongst everyone. That's not necessarily to say women. There's a lot of marginalized groups of men, like men of color, indigenous men that aren't equal in the eyes of society. And I feel it's important to recognize those differences and vulnerabilities because everyone should be treated equally and fairly. Like everyone should have the right to work. Everyone should have the right to exist without persecution, so to speak. Like you shouldn't be marginalized because of how you look or how you talk or where you're from initially.
How does this differ from various other forms or definitions of feminism?
I believe there's so many different ideologies of feminism, and that's why sometimes it's a hard, really hard to categorize because it's so personal, and what some people do regarding their own feminism or how they identify is different than me. Because I just would like to say, like, I wrote a note down, like, I've been called a feminist as an insult before, though I've never been insulted by that word if it's projected at me in that way, and that I've been told that like I was fat and ugly because of my feminist ideologies, and that I deserve to be raped by a gang of angry men to level me out, because apparently being brutalized is the only cure for feminism. So it's just even identifying as it, and this is why I feel so passionately about December 6th, because that was a main thing. Like when Marc Le Pen started shooting these women, right before he did it, he said, "You're a bunch of feminists." And the only kind of identifying moniker of that would be that they were women enrolled in like an engineering program.
So when you heard somebody trying to use the term feminist in an insulting way, what were they trying to communicate, do you think? What was the negative connotation that they were trying to communicate?
I'm just probably trying to discredit my ideologies. Like, it does have a negative tone to it. And I've dealt, like, with that my entire adult life, because when I was in university, I majored in women's studies. And even that in and of itself, like, telling people, you know, there's lots of jokes about, like, oh, what kind of job are you going to get with that? It's ridiculous. Oh, you're just, like, a feminist. No one cares about your opinion. And, well, like, getting a job has been difficult. I wouldn't chalk that up to my degree, just more the economic climate of since 2008 when I graduated. I think the most important thing of my degree, though, has that it's helped my activism immensely, and I come from an anti-oppressive framework, and I understand the intersectionalities of feminism. Like my experience, I am a white person or a white woman. My experiences living in Canada is going to be different than a woman who is of color or indigenous. And it's important to recognize that in feminism.
You know, it's interesting, too, because if we look historically at how feminism has evolved, say, since the 19th century, you know, you have the first wave where, you know, that was part of the temperance movement. It was also part of the get the vote movement. And those kinds of social activism that was taking place, of women coming together to be recognized within the system, the political system, and within society. And then it you have in the second wave, you have more of the stuff from the 70s, mm-hmm. where there was that kind of activism. And I remember as a kid, my grandmother used to subscribe to Chatelaine magazine. And I know if you go and look at it today, it's all recipes and design and all that. But back in those days, Doris Anderson was the editor. And they were taking on issues like reproductive rights, pay equity, and all those things that were part of that women's movement in the 70s, long before Ms. Magazine came along and was famous. You look at today, and when you were commenting earlier, it struck me that you touched upon how it's less focused on women's issues and how it's broadened out, and how there are these coalitions that are building between the women's feminism and other rights and social justice movements. I'm wondering how you see that playing out today.
I mean, Yeah, like all those magazines, even Cosmopolitan, like when it first came out, had a lot more like hardcore feminist ideologies. And unfortunately, like I feel like capitalism got in the way of that. And now it's just like, you know, pleasing your man and like spending money on various products to make yourself more beautiful. So I like the how feminism is changing society in the sense that it's bringing more awareness to people that may have not had a voice. Like, I know a lot of people like to bring up right now that, oh, we live in like a cancel culture and like everyone's so sensitive. But no, like these people that didn't feel comfortable maybe talking about racialized issues 20 years ago now feel like they have a voice and that they can be listened to. And I think that's really important, especially again, like white feminism, it's been so long, like the suffragette movement, the vote was only for white women. Like black women weren't allowed to vote then. I mean, it was a start, but like, and even like indigenous peoples weren't able to vote. And when women got the right to vote during the suffragette movement. So it's just important that we, like, as the feminism progresses, that we bring more issues to light and like help everyone that's disadvantaged, not necessarily women.
Now, how would you describe the status of women in our community?
I want to say that from what I've experienced through my own activism, like, it's difficult. We do have mediocre resources, I would say. Like, it always can be better and improved upon. But, like, women still need to be believed when they're talking about issues of domestic violence. 'Cause I know that's not always, they're not always listened to or it's brushed off, like, but there needs to be some sincerity when people are speaking out against their own experiences. Like, that's really important, just like in believing victims and survivors, but really listening to their story. Like, that's really how you can evolve, is just listening to them first and then seeing what can be done.
I wonder too, I mean, you watch how Cornerstone has been for the longest time over capacity in terms of dealing with domestic violence. And even though they've been successful in raising money and there's good community support, a lot of people recognize the important role that they play, they're still underfunded and they don't have enough space.
Exactly.
And I wonder how, what that, for the women, for women like yourself and others, how you react to that?
Well, it's devastating to know, like, if there's a woman in crisis, like, she might not be able to go to a safe space. Like, this is why women stay in abusive relationships. It's usually a financial reason. Like, they can't move away. And I was actually reading an awful article recently about, like, the way, because rent is so high right now, a lot of women are staying in abusive relationships because they can't afford to leave. And it shouldn't be like that. Like, you shouldn't have to face any type of abuse, whether it's emotional, verbal, sexual, just violence, just because you need a roof over your head and you need to be able to survive. So it would be nice to eventually see more places that are open to taking people who are just experiencing domestic violence, because a big thing is getting away from that and also just feeling safe.
Do you think there's a difference between urban and rural when it comes to how women's issues are being addressed?
Definitely. I've lived in other places than Coburg, more metropolitan areas. And I did feel that the resources, again, I always feel like resources could be better. There's always many stipulations in receiving resources and stuff like that, whether it's drug use, like just, again, being like, and the prevalence of homelessness. I do see, like, it's, I think it takes sometimes a while for rural communities to get their heads wrapped around, like, yes, homelessness exists in this area. You might not see it. It's not like when you walk down a street in Toronto and you might walk by, like, 10 to 20 homeless people. It might not be as visible, but that's not to say that it doesn't exist in this area.
I wonder, too, about gender issues. First of all, misogyny in the workplace is something that I've talked about with Nancy Johnson, the executive director of Cornerstone. I wonder how you feel that issue is coming to light in our community.
I think a most important thing is, again, just like conversations starting about it. And then the more you talk about maybe your own personal experiences, not to say that it gets around, but it makes people start to think. And again, just from a legal background, like I want to get into that type of law, which is like human rights and employment law. And it is important to know that these types of things do exist, even in a rural area, or even if you work for a franchise, like you have to know that you don't have to like listen to jokes that you might find inappropriate, or even just like harassment itself, or the pay equity thing is also a big issue.
Yeah, forgive me, I didn't mention when I introduced you that you are a trained paralegal.
Yes, I just became licensed a few months ago.
Yes. So, but expanding on the issue, the gender issues, you are also very active in the queer community within Northumberland. And I wonder to what extent, through a raising of awareness around women's issues, that is having any impact around broader gender identity issues?
Definitely, for sure. Like, that is also a changing political climate at the moment. And I'm glad to see, like, as much activism that they do, and I run specific, like, mental health sharing circles for youth and whatnot. Like, it is good to see that youth now feel a little bit more empowered in their gender identity and sexuality, something that did not exist when I was going to school in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, there were people that were gay and identified as that, but it wasn't as prevalent. And, like, you took a chance trying to live your life or openly identifying as queer in the late 90s, early 2000s, for sure.
Are we becoming a more tolerant community, do you think?
I definitely see that. Having experienced or what I knew, like, growing up here and what I see now, for sure. And every Pride event that I help organize, it's just, it always fills me with so much love, especially when, like, older people in the community show up. Like, I had a gentleman who was older, like, I don't want to assume anyone's age, but let's just say maybe over the age of 70. And after the rainbow crosswalk was revealed, he came up and said, like, thank you for doing this. It's just, you know, it's not just youth. There's older people in this community. We do live in a community that has a prevalence of a senior population. And it's nice to know that perhaps living years in the closet, like, they feel more comfortable being themselves, which is also very important.
Excellent. If you were wanting to start a discussion about feminism in Northumberland County, how would you want to frame that discussion?
I'm sorry, can you just repeat the question?
Not at all. If you were wanting to discuss, have a discussion or start a discussion about feminism in Northumberland County, how would you want to frame that discussion?
I think it would be good just kind of to point out maybe some issues that we're lacking or where I personally would feel like this area is a little bit behind. But again, it's like something I always push for with my queer activism is, like, we need more accessible resources, specifically for trans-identified people in this area. There's not much for them. And it's difficult even to access, like, if they have to, say, go to Peterborough or Oshawa or somewhere more urban to get the resources that they need. Like, we try our best, but, you know, some people don't have licenses, so then you're kind of stuck. Or you might have to take the train. And you might not have a lot of, like, financial resources personally. So it just becomes, like, a big thing. But I like to hear what – I always encourage people to talk to me and how they feel is lacking. And then, like, I like to bring that up when I do public speaking. So when I talk about queer issues or maybe I'm invited to talk about at some kind of ceremony, I just like to bring those things up to get people thinking about it and hopefully creating their own conversation surrounding it as well.
So early in your answer, you mentioned about you do have some issues that you think around feminism that we should be talking about. Can you be specific about those?
Well, just again, like, in this area, it's just like believing victims and survivors or just listening to them or giving them a platform to speak. And that's why I think, like, the USAV committee, when they do the ceremony for the December 6th, like, they usually have a speaker and the speaker is local and they talk about their issues. And it just makes people realize that there's these types of issues in Cobourg too, even though, or Northumberland area, even though we are a small rural community in Ontario.
So for some of us who have never been to that ceremony, can you give us some past examples or even what's being spoken about today, just to give us some ideas of the topics that get raised?
Well, there's a few women that have spoke about their personal experiences with domestic violence, which I've always found to be very powerful. At the same time, like, just sad to listen to, but also individuals that work within that community. So representatives from Cornerstone, representatives from other organizations that focus on domestic abuse survivors and things like that. There's a candle lighting ceremony that happens during it. There's a moment of silence. They read through the list of, like, every woman and child that has unfortunately lost their lives due to domestic violence over the year. And you'd like to see the list get smaller and smaller every year, but in fact, it doesn't.
Now, when you hear those stories, what are the components in that story which touch you most deeply when somebody describes something or an incident is being talked about? What is it that touches you most?
I just think I want everyone to, like, have a nice life, like, free of these burdens. So just hearing that, like, just, you know, being so scared or staying in relationships with people that are abusing you and making you feel really unsafe, but, like, also the fact that they feel like there's nowhere to go, or sometimes if they go to the police, they don't really get helped. And it's just terrible to think that people can't get away from these situations that are obviously impacting their physical being, but also, like, their mental health as well. And that's another area that we can focus on, is the mental health component of abuse. And then that's a big thing for services, is having mental health service, because that's where everything kind of starts. Is if you had access to mental health services, whether it's through counseling or group work, therapy, etc., like, it would help so many people.
What should men be talking about if we were to have a discussion in Northumberland about feminism?
I think the men around here should be open to these discussions and not automatically shut them down if someone's trying to talk about feminism or the importance of something, because they might not be aware of how some women or women-identified people in this area are feeling regarding their own safety.
On that note, we're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm talking to Ashley Bowman, who is an active member in raising awareness about vital issues surrounding women in Northumberland, and we'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. You are listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guest today is Ashley Bowman. We are talking about the 30th anniversary of the Montreal Massacre at École Polytechnique and the issues facing women in our community. Now, before we came here today, I had invited Liz Warmland, who is the host of Nothing Exists Radio Hour here on Northumberland 89.7 FM every Friday at 8 p.m. She talks to many, many women on her show about a very diverse range of topics, from well-being to social justice. And I had asked Liz to write a poem for us to commemorate today and to the 30th anniversary. And I understand, Ashley, you have a copy of that poem and you'd like to read it.
Yes, I'm going to read it on behalf of Liz Warmland. So it's called 3014 by Liz Warmland. This morning, I woke up with a plan for my day. Work, converse, learn, share, connect, create, holding the expectation that I could relatively sagely occupy this world, a woman. 30 years passed. 14 women lost their lives with the same set of reasonable expectations. Work, converse, learn, share, connect, create, simply for being women. And as I think of the fragility of masculinity and the role it played in this, I remember in sorrow and fondness, in 30 years past, 14 women.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And thank you to Liz for sending that along. That was beautiful. It makes you think for a couple of minutes. You weren't even born when this took place.
Actually, I was 4 years old.
You were 4 years old?
Yeah.
Wow, you're older than I thought. I apologize.
That's
already.
Okay.
Wow.
I like that. I appreciate it.
Wow, did I step in that?
No. Anyway. I'm glad that's on radio.
Okay, so for the record. Interesting enough, we were talking before we came in the studio, and you mentioned the fact that when you were going through school, none of this was taught as part of curriculum. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wanted, I made note in this and some notes I had for this radio show that I didn't even realize this was a thing until 2004 when I was at Trent University and they were just holding kind of like a vigil, I think, or signing a petition to kind of end violence against women. And the two people that were at the table informed me that this happened and I had no idea. And I felt awful, the fact that, you know, 2004, so I was 19 years old and I didn't know this massacre happened, even though, like, I lived through the Columbine thing that happened in the United States and there was lots of talk about school shootings and whatnot. And I'm not sure if it was just because maybe I wasn't as that kind of minded during my youth, because I was never hearing about it or maybe even paying attention to the news. I don't think I really did that as a teenager. But when it was brought to my attention, my heart just sank. And especially the fact that I was also a woman in university and especially in a program like women's studies. Like, I remember one of my really good friends who was also going through for women's studies saying, like, her roommates, friends, the one guy just had this hate on for the women's studies program at Trent and kind of made similar sentiments that he'd like to go in there and, like, with a gun and, like, shoot it up. And, I mean, nothing, you know, no one called the police on him at that time for saying that. But that also stuck with me, too, just that, like, we can't exist and learn, and even though, like, what's so wrong with what we're learning, or just, it's academia, we're just learning a different part of what has been studied, and just bringing prevalence to the injustice of women in society historically, and at the, like, currently at that time. And I find that type of education was so invaluable to me, because it's really helped my activism. But yeah, so it's just, I'm glad that I got involved, because I got involved with the ESAV committee when I moved back to Coburg, and I saw that they did this ceremony annually, and it was something that I wanted to get involved in. So I've been a member of that committee since 2013.
I wonder what extent, because of this event, two debates came out of this, two societal discussions. One was around feminism, which we've been talking about, but the other was about guns. And when we got talking about guns, it became unto itself an incredible debate.
Yeah.
And about gun ownership and that kind of thing, which is often associated with men.
Mm-hmm.
And gun culture is associated with men, not always, but is part of it. How did that influence, do you think, the discussion about women and women's abuse or women's rights or feminism, as those two things sort of bump up against each other? Because when we do talk about this, I've noticed even in today's coverage, you know, there's a lot more about the women this time, but a lot of times we talk about gun violence and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, because I think the long gun registry came out of this, right?
That's
and
correct.
Then, like, a few years ago during the Harper government, they wanted to get rid of that. And I know that the talk about getting rid of the long gun registry started the talk about the Montreal massacre again. And it's just important not to go on a tirade about guns right now, but those are tools that are very commonly used in domestic violence. Like, especially if a woman is in a relationship where there's a history, like maybe the police are called a lot because of violent altercations. Sometimes at some point that woman dies because her partner decides to shoot her. Or there's, like, so many articles online now about women, like, saying no to men that, like, more so in the United States because they obviously have different gun regulations than in Canada. But, like, you know, women saying no to men, like, they don't want to go out with them, and then the guy coming back and, like, shooting them at their work or something, like, completely heinous like that. So there is a prevalence, like, with gun violence equating to, like, domestic violence, because you just read the articles about it. And that's why I think a lot of groups just feel so passionate about gun regulations, is because of how they are used. And when it's common to use it against your partner, which is completely awful, like, you have a weapon in your house that could be turned against you at any moment, right?
Where do we see examples of things taking place where women have made advancements in our community?
I think, like, Cornerstone does pretty good work bringing the violence or domestic violence to light, especially from a local perspective. And there's other organizations, like there's Victim Services, and just having supports, especially when you're going through the process. Because say you are a victim of domestic abuse and the person that is your abuser is charged, it's difficult going through the court system as well, because those types of cases can take a long time. You know, you have to relive your victim, your experiences when you're relaying what happened to you to a judge. Like, it can be really hard just to constantly relive the abuse when you're trying to seek justice.
Interesting enough, too, I've noticed, especially within the last year, there was a major women in entrepreneurship program announced by Venture 13, which is getting federal support. And we see quite a lot of women's business network flourishing in our area. How about that side of things? I mean, are we seeing a rise, particularly in supporting women entrepreneurs and women business people?
Yeah, from what I can tell from that, it's really great to have that program, because one, it's making women kind of more independent in their finances, and I'm glad that there's a program that exists that encourages that. And it is great to see that there is, like, it is federally funded, because it helps those who may not have even ever decided that they want to be a small business owner become a small business owner.
You know, it's interesting. I as part of the Legacy series, which I contribute to on a regular basis, one of the interviews I did was with Joan Chalovich, who was the first woman mayor of Coburg.
Yep.
But we were talking about her early career, and she was ran a business. Investment business in mm-hmm. Coburg at a time when women business owners were not particularly supported or flourishing. And she tells a wonderful story in our interview about how she used to get together with the other women, and they to this day continue to get together to support each other. How important is it for women to come together and be supportive in the world of business?
I think that is probably the utmost importance. You want to support the other female business owners in the area, because you want them to flourish, to say that you're flourishing. And it's just good to know that there is that support there, especially, say, maybe if you don't feel like you're doing enough, or sometimes, like, people's lives can get so hectic and you might feel like you're neglecting your responsibilities. But to know that you might have a group of support that can step in and help you in any way that they can, and that I feel like that women's entrepreneurial, like, business strategy that's happening is a great foundation for that type of support.
During the recent federal election, especially in the English language debate, it was very interesting to see four men talking about women's rights to choose, and they were sort of yelling at each other. And then all of a sudden, Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP, said, "A man has no position on a woman's right to choose." Should we be shocked that women's rights and gender equality issues are not a top priority for most politicians?
I'm going to say no, that we shouldn't be shocked for that. And I did not really like how this past election went, so I didn't really watch any of the debates, but I did see that instance. And it was bad seeing leaders yell on top of each other and kind of say what they feel, how women should act and whatnot, but no one really saying, like, why don't we ask women what they want? But I feel like the debate around women's reproductive rights and justice was heavily targeted in this election. And it's just important to note that, you know, women do want body autonomy. Like, they want to be in control of their bodies, whether that's accessing abortion or not, that is a personal choice. But it's good to know that it's there if it's needed.
What items or issues should municipal politicians be addressing in your mind?
I think right now the most important thing is just like the homelessness issue that's happening in Northumberland. It seems to be a hot topic, and that very negatively affects women as well as men. I'm not going to say that's only an issue that affects women. It's not, but it's really important. Like, the path to, like, being prosperous or whatnot is, like, knowing, first of all, that you have a warm place to stay and you're not in the elements. Also, it's really important to have resources for mental health and addiction services. Like, I feel a lot of people get stuck in situations that they can't get out of because they don't have adequate resources, or getting those resources, or the bureaucracy surrounding those resources, like constant filling out of forms, waiting forever. Like, of course, people are going to relapse or just kind of give up because it's just so tough. It would be nice if you could just kind of go somewhere and be like, hey, my mental health is not great today. I would like to have someone to talk to. Going somewhere and getting a hot meal, like, that's always really beneficial as well.
What about pay equity?
Pay equity is definitely important. And I know that, again, is a hot topic for a lot of people, but I feel like if you are working, you know, you have the exact same amount of seniority, you're doing very similar job as someone, but because you're a woman, you're getting maybe $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 less than your male counterpart. Like, I don't agree with that.
I couldn't find anything particularly that stood out, but I couldn't find anything that indicated that as a municipal employee that men and women receive the same salary.
Oh, right. That's actually really interesting. And I guess that type of information would have to come out to see if the municipalities follow a pay equity model.
And I also workplace harassment, at least when I was making some queries and trying to, I'm sure there's things in place because I know that it's required.
Yes.
But in terms of, I know in the past we've seen examples of politicians not particularly treating women very well, and I'm thinking of Robert Poletnik in particular.
Right.
But we've seen that. Do you think municipalities are taking a strong enough stand on that kind of treatment between political leaders and staff?
Oh, good point. I would say that my knowledge of it is not great. It's not something I've extensively researched in the type of research that I do. But now I'm definitely going to follow that, because I feel like if they don't, it should be something that they should pay attention to. Because one thing that was brought up during the election is the fact that women don't want to get into politics because of the prevalence of sexual harassment, or just trying to, like, keep them down, so to speak, because they're women, and how so many women who've wanted to further their political career have reached a point where, like, they just don't want to deal with it, so they back down. And I don't think anyone who wants to get in politics should be made to feel like they can't move forward.
You know, it's really interesting. I went through each of the municipal councils, all seven of them in Northumberland, and notably enough, in the urban municipalities, Port Hope, Cobourg, Brighton, you have three women sitting on council. But in the rural municipalities, you have only two women. And as yet, women don't represent a majority on council. How significant, also I noted that we have one female mayor,
yes,
Mandy Martin, down in Cramie Township. Are women well represented, do you think, in local politics?
I'm going to say no. I feel like there has been a bit of a shift in the last few municipal elections, but from what I can remember from being a child and stuff, it has been an old boys club, and I feel like some of the things that come out of that is really reflective of that type of leadership.
How about in terms of provincial and federal representation? Do you think locally we have a gender balance?
It's hard to say. I feel like there's been a prevalence of MPs and MPPs in this area that are predominantly men. Like, Kim Rudd was, obviously, it was different for that. But I don't know. I want to say people aren't voting for these representatives because of their gender. But it's hard to say. I would like to see more, or candidates running. There's a lot of women that run as candidates, but they don't necessarily get elected.
Well, it's really interesting because I look back and you know, people like Christine Stewart,
yeah,
Joan Fawcett, yep, Kim Rudd, all liberals. And generally, conservatives and progressive conservatives tend to nominate men, even though women do vie for the for the nomination. We haven't seen that, particularly on a provincial or federal level. So I don't know what that tells us. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, because hopefully when these parties come together, they're picking the best person to represent them. But it's interesting to look at that pattern. Feminism has fought gender inequality. For example, it's now more focused on inequality associated with class and race and sexualities and abilities. Does that play out locally, do you think, or do the fights continue to be more broad in terms of feminism?
I think it can.
Locally, I'm talking locally.
Yeah, I definitely think it can, and I think it's important to touch on these issues. Even if they're the people in the community don't feel like they're equally represented in those types of issues, I think it's still important to talk about, because intersectionality is very important in feminism. Like I was saying before, like my experiences are different than a person of color or an Indigenous woman. And it's really important to note that, even if you come from a community that might not have a prevalence of that type of population.
There's a lot of talk on a larger, a macro scale about the Me Too movement.
Right.
How do you see Me Too manifesting itself in Northumberland?
I think what I'd hope to see, that if someone was to come out and say, maybe I've been harassed by this person or they did this, it'd be important to listen to them and listen to what the person is saying. Because sometimes, like, things that have come out in the past, like the victim or survivor gets shot down immediately because of who they might be addressing. And it's just important for the Me Too movement to, like, listen to them and not automatically assume that they're in it for the money or that they want to take this person down because of some kind of, like, vendetta they have against them. Just really listening to women is a great start, and then working from their experiences to how better the resources that are available within our community.
The Antonio Saramento case is before the courts locally, and I know there are a number of allegations against him which have yet to be decided. Is this an important case for our community, since it involves a high-profile individual? And I wonder to what extent this is our own version of the Gio Gomeshi trial.
Very interesting point there. I think it is important because he was a beloved member of the community, and there's a lot of people that really like him and like what he's done and what he's brought to the community. But at the same time, it's important to listen that maybe he wasn't always nice to everyone or treated everyone fairly or with respect. And it's important that those people have a voice too.
Now, I know you're part of the Take Back the Night, and it's a significant event in our community. Can you tell us a bit about it and why it's important?
Take Back the Night stemmed from various women's movements in the 70s, just because women wanted to feel safe just being out at night. And, like, 50 years later, it's a lot of women still don't feel comfortable walking around at nighttime. And you should be able to walk anywhere, any time of day without not feeling safe. So when Liz asked me to be a part of this community, part of this committee a few years ago, I jumped on the chance because I think it's I had organized Take Back the Night things with school and whatnot. But doing it on a local level was great because, again, it just brings that type of awareness to the community that there are people that don't feel safe at nighttime, and to know that you do have a group that does support you and you can come out and feel safe and just feel, again, just that sense of community and support that you can get, to know that you're not alone.
I was wondering, we're just about out of time, and I wanted to take a moment to have you read the names of the victims from the Montreal Massacre at L'École Polytechnique on December 16th, 1989, around 5 p.m. So would you take a few moments, and then when we're done, we'll take a few seconds of silence for us to all remember.
So the victims are Genevieve, Helen, Natalie, Barbara, Anne-Marie, Maud, Barbara, Maurice, Anne-Marie, Sonia, Michelle, Annie, and Annie.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. And I want to thank all our listeners today for tuning in. Please join me again next week when we talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So please tune in. I would also like to thank all of you who continue to write thoughtful, caring, and insightful comments to my posts of last week's interview, especially about Transition House. Social media is not always a good place to debate issues, yet I am grateful to those of you who have demonstrated you can still have intelligent, considered, and caring discussions online. Thank you so much. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthis@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This, or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you'd like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca to find it there. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this, Northumberland.